I appreciate Tyler and the worship band finishing with Open the Eyes of My Heart. I requested that because that's the title of my sermon today, is Open My Eyes, Lord. It's easy to miss something you're not looking for, even if it's right in front of you. You believe that? It's easy to miss something, even when it's right in front of you? I mean, as men, we do that all the time. My wife will say, hey, go get the ketchup out of the fridge, and I'll open that door, and it's not there. And she comes over and just, right in front of me, takes it, sits it on the table. Guys, is that not what we do? Yeah. It's easy to miss something that you're not looking for, even when it's right in front of you. So I want to make this point. So I'm going to show you a video. Simply follow the instructions on the video. Now, if you've seen this video, all right, be quiet until it's over. All right, so go ahead and let's watch the video.
This is an awareness test. How many passes does the team in white make? The answer is 13. But did you see the moonwalking bear?
Go!
How many saw the moonwalking bear? All right. I was totally blown away when I first saw that video. I'm like, I was so intent on counting how many passes because I got to be right, you know. 13, yes! But did you see the moonwalking? What? And then they go back. I'm like, whoa. It was right in front of me and I didn't see it. It's easy to miss something you're not looking for. Look at the next two slides. What do you see? Do you see a face? Or do you see an Eskimo getting ready to go into his igloo? Next one. What do you see? See a man playing a saxophone? Or do you see a woman's face? Yeah, you can see both, but it's like it's easy to miss something you're not looking for. Just as it's easy to miss what you're not looking for in the physical world, it's the same with the spiritual world. There are spiritual realities, I think, that we may miss every day simply because we're just not looking for them. We're not looking for them. And so our prayer every morning needs to be, open my eyes, Lord. Open my eyes. Aaron used this scripture a couple weeks ago when he preached. It's taken out of 2 Kings chapter 6, verses 16 through 17. And in this passage of scripture, the king of Aram is wanting to capture the king of Israel. But every time the king of Aram would send his army to a certain place, Elisha the prophet would warn the king of Israel so the king of Israel would avoid that place. And so the king of Aram is just getting totally frustrated and he thinks he's got a mole in his, leadership. But they assure him, hey, we're all loyal to you. The problem's not us. The problem is there's this prophet in Israel named Elisha. And every time you go to set up a trap, he warns the king of Israel. And so the king of Aram says, all right, then First, we need to capture Elisha. So where's he at? And they said, well, he's staying in the city of Dothan. So they sent horses and chariots and a strong force there. And then when the servant of the man of God rose up early that morning and he looked outside and he saw all the army and the horses and the chariots surrounding the city, he says, oh, my Lord, what are we going to do? And Elisha answered, don't be afraid, for those who are with us are more than those who are with them. And Elisha then prayed, O Lord, open his eyes so that he may see. And then the Lord opened the servant's eyes, and he looked, and he saw the hills full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. Psalm 119, verse 18 says, open my eyes to see wondrous things in your word. In Acts 26, verses 17 through 18, this is where the Lord is giving the Apostle Paul his commission. And Jesus says to Paul, he says, I am sending you to them. The them is the Gentiles, that's you and me. He says, I'm sending you to them to what? Open their eyes and to turn them from darkness to light and from the power of Satan to God. Open my eyes. Open my eyes. You know, it's possible to be in the middle of wondrous things and not see them. I mean, you can be in the middle of beautiful things and totally miss them. I want to share with you a true story. A man in India, early 1800s, by the name of Ali Hafid. And he was a poor farmer with a meager harvest each year. He had a little plow, a little cabin, meager cabin. He had an ox and a cow, and that was it. And he was by no means a wealthy man. In fact, he had just enough, he made just enough from farming to scratch out a meager living, just enough to barely get by each year. It was a harsh life. I mean, he had to work from sun up to sundown every day of the year, plowing the fields, working hard. One day, a traveler came through the area. Now, back then, there weren't many hotels, and so, especially in remote areas, there was this obligation of hospitality that was upon everybody if a traveler happened to come through your area. And so one day this traveler from the Middle East was passing through, and he was welcomed into Ali Hafid's humble little home. And that night the traveler began to tell them stories of all the things that he had seen and experienced as he was being entertained by Ali Hafid. And he said to Ali, he said, it's such a shame that you have to work so hard. I mean, I know that you work every day, and you work so hard. Have you not heard? And he began to tell Ali Hafid this story. And he said, you should leave here and go in search of diamonds, because I have heard of this place between two mountains, and it's called the Valley of the Moon. And in this place between two mountains, in the Valley of the Moon, there is a stream that flows between them. And all that you have to do is reach your hand down in that stream, and you pull a scoop out diamonds, and you would become fabulously wealthy. While the traveler left, Ali went back to work. But day after day, he mulled over that traveler's story in his head. And it finally started to get the best of him. So one day he came in, he announced to his family that he was selling the farm and that he was going to go search for those diamonds. So he did. He sold his farm. He put what money he got in the little sack. He kissed his wife goodbye. He hugged his children. He provided some temporary shelter for them. And he set off to go find the Valley of the Two Moons with the stream running through them. And he told his sons when he left, "Boys, when I come back, you're going to be fabulously wealthy. You're going to sit on thrones like kings. We're going to have a good life." And so he left his farm and he set out in search of those diamonds. He never found those diamonds. He actually ended up in Barcelona, Spain. And in a moment of extreme despair, he took his own life. He jumped into a raging stream. But before he did that, he took out a pencil, some paper, and he just wrote this short little letter back home to his wife. And this is all it said: "There are no diamonds anywhere." He left that note for his family, and he jumped into that raging, swollen river, and he drowned. That's a tragic story, but it's not over. Kind of like Paul Harvey, and now the rest of the story. And let me emphasize, this is a true story. There was a man who bought the farm from Ali Hafid. And he had been, you know, that Ali Hafid had been working all of his life. And he bought the same plow, the same ox, the same cow, and the same meager little cabin. And he was working that same land with that same plow, with that same ox. And as he would plow the land, there would continually be these annoying black rocks that would come up that would get caught in his plow, and he would have to stop and unearth those black rocks and toss them aside. You know where this is going, don't you? Well, one day he went to pick up one especially large black rock, and as he held it up, the sun just caught it just right, and it glinted with the colors of the rainbow. So he thought, well, that one's kind of pretty. So he put it on the mantle of the fireplace in his meager little cabin. The next day, the Catholic priest came by to welcome this man and his family to the community, and he was going to invite him to be a part of what the church was doing and to get involved in the community. And as he was talking, right in mid-sentence, the priest sees this black rock on the mantle behind this farmer, and he said, "Where'd you get that rock from?" Farmer says, "I got it out in the field. It's full of them. I thought it was kind of unique, though. It's pretty, isn't it?" And the priest says, "Do you have any idea what this is?" He says, "It's a black rock." He says, "No, this is a diamond in the rough. And this is the biggest diamond in the rough that I have ever seen." Sure enough, people, they had it analyzed. And back in the 1800s, that one rock was worth $25,000. And it became the birthplace of the largest diamond mine in the world, the famous Golconda diamond mines. And the Golconda diamond mines, this is where the Queen of England gets all of her diamonds. All of the jewels in her crown, all of the jewelry that she wears, she gets the diamonds from the Golconda diamond mine because they are of such high quality. Think about this. The man who threw himself into the river in Spain, who took his own life, he never realized he had actually been living on acres of diamonds. Everything that he thought was out there, somewhere else, was actually right beneath him. He just didn't have the eyes to see it. He didn't appreciate what God had given him. Bible reminds us that we need to pray, people. We need to pray that our eyes will be opened to the blessings that we already have. We need to pray that we can see the good in the marriage that we're in the ministry that we've been given, in the job that we have, the opportunities that are afforded to us, and the children and the grandchildren that God has already blessed us with. Because I'm afraid, people, that sometimes we don't realize that we're living in acres of diamonds. And when we're going through difficult times, when we're going through times of struggle, we need to realize that God has placed us there for a purpose. And we are possibly living in acres of diamonds. In Pennsylvania, a man worked a farm. It was a dairy farm. And he worked that farm for 23 years. But he hated that farm. It was an annoying farm because here he wanted it was a dairy farm and there was a stream that ran through the middle of his farm, but that stream stunk to high heaven. And it stunk so bad the cows wouldn't even drink from it. So he dammed up that stream because the cows didn't want anything to do with that water. And after 23 years, he just got so frustrated with the whole situation, he sold the farm, whole thing, for $833. Next owner came in, and he undammed the water. And still, it stank to high heaven. Cows wouldn't drink it. So he had it analyzed and tested. Sure enough, it was pure coal and oil that was causing that stinky odor. It ended up being, you ready for this? A $100 million farm of oil that the first farmer was living on, and he never knew it. And today, the city of Titusville, Pennsylvania, is located on that piece of property. And the oil wells are still, to this day, producing oil. They're living in acres of diamonds. I don't think we understand the hidden potential oftentimes in our present job, in our current relationships, or even in the very location where you live. The answer to your dreams might just be at your fingertips. But the only way you can see it is if you pray for God to open your eyes. So before making a big change in your life, before deciding to walk away from your job, or your marriage, or some other situation, we need to remember, be reminded, and to think through that maybe, just maybe, we're walking away from acres of diamonds. I mean, when we read the story of the prodigal son in the Bible, you have to ask yourself, what was he thinking? You know, he walked away from his father's farms with all the blessings that his father had for him. I think I know what happened, because I was a youth minister for about 30 years. And I raised three boys. I had three teenagers. I know how boys talk. And they got together and they go, his friends, the prodigal son's friends, said, dude, because that's what teenage boys say. He said, dude, if you could just get out of your father's farm. Dude, if you could just get out from underneath your father's thumb. Man, you could be so happy. Hey, dude, everyone knows the grass is greener on the other side. Good life is always out there. But as you know, because of how the story ends, the prodigal son never realized until he was really bad off that he actually had been living in acres of diamonds. And you know the story. He ends up way out there, losing everything. And he's in such bad shape, such dire straits, that he ends up eating pig food. But when that happened, it's kind of like the Lord opened his eyes. And he remembered how good he had it back home. And so he set out. And he went back to his father, and his father ran to meet him, and he welcomed him. And it was at that moment the prodigal son realized he had left only to discover that it was home where the acres of diamonds in his father's kingdom was. And he just had never seen it before. We desperately need to teach our young people, to teach our children and our grandchildren, that whatever it is that they're looking for, that joy, that happiness, that purpose, that peace, it's not out there. It's not in Hollywood. It's not in New York City. It's not from the lies of culture and the lies of society. But they need to see, they need to pray that God would open their eyes to see that whatever you're looking for, it is right here, right now, in the kingdom of God. And that's all the farther you need to look. But you just got to pray for God to give you the eyes to see it. Because guess what? We're living in acres of diamonds. If you have Jesus Christ, you have blessings unimaginable. You are wealthy beyond compare. And too often we just think about the ifs, don't we? Oh, if I could just get a better job, if I could just get a bigger house, if I could just get a faster car, if I could just, you fill in the blank, then I'd be happy. And we always think it's out there, somewhere else. And we don't understand. We're living in acres of diamonds. If we have our health and our soul is right with Jesus Christ, and I have my wife and my children and my grandchildren with me, And while I may end up going through some trials and some very difficult times, regardless of those trials, regardless of the difficult times that we go through, what I have in Jesus Christ right now is worth going through the heat and the pressure, because there are diamonds to be made in every crisis and pressure situation. Because in the process of making a diamond, you know what it takes? Time and pressure. A diamond is born out of the intense heat and the pressure. Because without the heat and the pressure, you know what a diamond is? A lump of coal. That's right. It's just a lump of coal without the time and the pressure. But if that piece of coal is under the right pressure and the right amount of time, out of that, a diamond is born. And it can be the same with us. Don't run from your trials. Because in them, you will, if you allow God to open your eyes and you allow God to guide you, you'll become more and you will be able to do more. Because God knows exactly what's involved in birthing a diamond out of you or out of your marriage. Or out of your work situation. Sometimes we forget that there's acres of diamonds to be found in a marriage because you go through the pressure and the hard times and they just cause you to forget. There are acres of diamonds, I really believe, in every church and every ministry. But you just have to be willing to pray to God. Ask Him to open your eyes so that you can see. And don't just center in on the negative, but see the potential in every person, in every situation. You may have heard about this. Very interesting phenomenon that takes place in South America, where the mighty Amazon River empties out into the Atlantic Ocean. The story is told of a ship that was in distress. Because you see, they had weathered a very powerful storm, and this ship had been blown off course. And they had spent more time at sea than they had ever planned on because of that raging storm. And so what happened was they ran out of their supply of fresh water. And the crew was literally dying of thirst. Now, back then in the 1800s, the only way to communicate from one ship to another was through flags. And so one day, when they were despairing that all was lost, they happened to see another ship appear on the horizon. And so they sent the message, you know, with the flags. We need water. Please help. And the ship simply responded back with the flags. Let down your buckets. And the captain sent back his message. He says, no, you don't understand. We are dying of thirst. We need fresh water. And the other ship sent back the very same message. Let down your buckets. The captain didn't understand it. But he was so desperate, he let down the bucket. And what he brought up was pure, clean, refreshing, life-giving water. Because what he didn't realize, because they had been so blown off course, he was only 200 miles from shore where the Amazon empties into the Atlantic. And the heavier salt water is pressed down and the fresh water rises above it. And it does that for 200 miles out into the Atlantic. All the time, those men were dying of thirst. There was living water beneath them. So it is with life. There are people who are thirsty for meaning and purpose and direction in their life. And they are desperate and searching, but all they have to do is let down their buckets. And the Savior of the world is ready to give them living water. And He will satisfy, He will heal, He will restore like no other. Just got to let down their buckets. I want to conclude with this story about a man by the name of Steve Wynn. Steve Wynn, according to Forbes magazine, is worth about $3 billion. Okay, I can't comprehend that, you know. I can't even comprehend $1 million, all right? He's worth $3 billion. And he's the one who's responsible for the revitalizing and the remodeling and the building up of the Vegas Strip. Okay, he designed some of the most famous hotels and casinos there on the Vegas Strip. The Bellagio, the Wynn, the Mirage, and so on. Steve Wynn has a great passion and a love for art. Especially one piece of art meant a lot to him. He was emotionally attached to this particular piece of art, and it was called La Reve. Are you impressed? That's French. I took 2 years of high school French just so I could say that. All right. La Reve simply means the dream. Because he liked this piece of art because it represented where he came from. You know, not having anything, and then the dream life that he was living now. Well, he so loved this painting, he put it up in the lobbies of his hotels so his guests could see it and appreciate it. It's a Picasso, you can tell. You know how much he paid for that? $50 million. I don't think I'd pay $50 million, all right, for that painting. Or 50 cents, yeah, all right, you know. But he did. So he loved La Reve, the dream. $50 million, put it there on display so that all of the guests who came to the Wynn could see it and appreciate it. But 5 years later, he put it up for auction. I guess he got over his dream. And he sold it for $155 million. He was going to sell it, buy some more art. So Steve Wynn decided he was going to have this big party in Vegas where everybody could come and to say goodbye to the dream, La Reve. So he invited all the most wealthy, famous jet-setter people to come. And there were about 1,000 people at this party to say goodbye to the dream. So he got up on a he had it up on a pedestal on the stage at this party. And so he got up before all of his guests. Now, you need to know Steve Wynn has an eye disease that sometimes affects his equilibrium. And as he stepped up on the stage and pointed to refer to the dream, he lost his balance and his arm went right through the dream, went right through the painting, right there in front of God and everybody, whole world. Now, naturally, the investment banker who was willing to pay $155 million for the dream withdrew his offer. In fact, he says, that painting's now trash. It's worthless. I have no interest in purchasing it. I want my money back. But Steve Wynn had a real interest in this painting still. He so loved it, he wasn't willing to throw it away. In fact, when he first bought it, he actually had it insured for $50 million so he could get his investment back. But he didn't even want to cash in that policy. He says, I want to restore this torn dream. So he went to Europe in search of what they call an art surgeon. And an art surgeon was a man who could put the dream back together. He was a man who could restore that painting actually back to its original condition. And Steve Wynn actually finds an art surgeon who was willing to take on the project, and it took over an entire year for him to restore the painting. So after 1 year, Steve Wynn flies the dream back to Vegas, and he has another party. Invites all the jet set people. And all of the people who came marveled at the painting. Because they said, that man did such a good job of restoring this painting, you could not tell that it was ever torn or destroyed. That is, if you looked outward at the painting. But if you turned it around and you looked at the backside of the canvas, there you could see all of the work that the art surgeon had done to reconstruct and to repair what you could see then on the front side. And the same man, the same investment banker, who said that it was trash, that it was worthless, that it would never be of any value, throw the dream away, he humbles himself and he calls up Steve Wynn. And this same man who demanded his $155 million back said he is now willing to pay $189 million for the painting. People, do you realize it's now worth more after it was ripped and torn than it was before? We have a God who can restore the years that the locusts have eaten. God can take broken dreams and broken people, and He can make them whole again. When we say that marriage is torn beyond repair, that child will never be restored, he'll always be an addict. That relationship between a father and a daughter will never be restored. Some people see only trash. But our God isn't an art surgeon. He's a heart surgeon. And He can take what others only see as torn beyond repair, worthless, trash, beyond hope. And our God can work inside a person, and He can repair and restore any marriage, make that addict clean again, fix that relationship so that it's actually better than it was before. Do you believe that, people? We only see trash, but our God, when He looks at you, you know what He sees? Acres of diamonds. So we need to pray. Open my eyes, God, so that I can see the acres of diamonds that You have placed in my life. I'm going to ask the worship team come back up. And I want us to stand and sing that song one more time. Open the eyes of my heart.